From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the first day of February 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Merrill Crowley. He's at Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois. A bit later in the program, we'll discuss the agricultural cash grain markets with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility. That's their ethanol plant outside of Logansport, Indiana. We'll take up the weather forecast too. Drew Lerner will be here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And along the way, we'll check in with the Illinois Pork Producers Association. They elected a new president yesterday. We'll have a discussion with Jason Probst. He's from Neoga, Illinois. And it all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's the first day of February. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, joined by Merrill Crowley now. He's at Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois. Thanks for being with us today, Merrill.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
What happened in Chicago? Things were looking pretty rough yesterday, and here we are. They've turned around.
Well, I think it's kind of a little bit like Dan's always talking about, be careful at the end of the month because you have some positions, you know, being taken off, and in the beginning of the month they'll put them back on. So I believe some of that was involved today. We had fun buying from 8,000 to 10,000 in corn, 6,000 to 7,000 contracts in soybeans, and 7,000 to 8,000 contracts in wheat. There was some fresh Chinese demand announced, and we had another record ethanol grind. And if this rise is a steady Gulf basis, add in the Ukraine conflict and a positive meal seasonal, and you see what we see today. You know, and the beans, with what you've seen in the downside, it's encouraging coming off of the lows that they're at. I thought they went a little lower than they should have. Looked for support more down around 25 to 28, and we went past that. But 2 days later, we're back above it. Corn, the fundamentals, and the, not the fundamentals, but the technicals looked really strong, even with the correction they had. I thought they could get down to 52. They went to 55 and have sprung back up. Now all we need to see is a move back up of 69, and I think that rally's cooking again.
To what point do you suppose, and when will producers decide to let loose of what's in their bins?
Well, let's see, two-part question. First, we'll start with when will they release. We saw the funds basically buy 361.4 million bushels from the 4th through the 17th of January. I did that backwards, but... And basis levels declined during that time period, and I think you were seeing producer selling hit that, and that's one of the reasons why the basis declined, why we're seeing the fund buying. And your other part of the question was, where to? And initially, when we went, we have now have the funds long, they're net long corn. And if you just kind of take a real simple look at the charts and say, well, they were short here, they moved basically a net long here, that is suggesting a move of 44 cents. So if they keep moving and go as long as they were short, you could be saying something around 390. I see two inverted head and shoulders patterns projecting 390 in basis March. And then we've been in a trading range and have been there since October. That trading range is about 27 cents wide, and if you break out, that suggests you're going to move 27 cents higher, and that projects 396. So, you know, I think you're going to see prices eventually get there, but it's going to be a drawn-out affair unless we throw something in weather-wise. And the reason for that is we just have so much corn that's yet to be sold. Every time we get some decent rally, you're going to see farmers sell into it. Now, the same thing with beans. Not so much farmer selling, I don't think, from here, but we've seen a lot of farmer selling initially from Brazil, although, you know, we're always talking about the dollar and the dollar being higher and lower. And, of course, we're basically erased all the rally that we've seen from the presidential election. You know, that rally that started after Trump was election day, he got voted in. There was a nice rally in the dollar. Now it's backed off. And within about, 100 points of the beginning of that rally. And with that in mind, you'd think, well, everything, that rally was hurting our exports, and it did somewhat. But my point here I'm trying to make in a long roundabout way is that the Brazilian real has also rallied along with that. So that softens the blow of our dollar, and they are kind of behind on sales. Now, I also saw a story this morning where the Brazilian shipping agency is talking about a lineup of vessels, and it stands to export 4.39 million metric ton, or 97% greater than the lineup during the same time frame last year. Now, if the farmers aren't selling and those aren't available at port, they're going to have to come to the U.S.
So things are looking a bit more positive at this point. Are you of a mind, because we have such large ending stock supplies, that either we're using more corn than expected, and that would be in the ethanol grind as well as the livestock side, or that we harvested a smaller crop than USDA had thought we had?
Well, you know, in any type of situation when you have an either or, you could have a little bit of both. You know, if you take a look at the whole situation, just to get stocks to use in the U.S. back down to the 10% we had in the 2010 to 2012 time period, you only have to use another 6.2% per day. With the beans, to get that in the same area, down around 7.5% stocks to use, you really only have to use about 2.7% more stocks per day. So, you know, you take a little bit off the crop, you add a little bit more to the demand, and pretty soon the trouble is we look at all these big figures. And if you break them down into daily figures and small figures, it seems more possible that we could eat through this much more than everybody's talking. Same thing with crude. You've got crude, big supply of crude, and yet they're dropping their production 1.8 million barrels a day on OPEC. You know, that's only 1.9% of total usage. So it'll take them about a year to get rid of the oversupply. So like I said, if you break things down, you know, the old story of a journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. You break things down into smaller particles, it isn't quite so overwhelming what we have on hand. On the other hand, whether or not you have increased bean acres here in the U.S. with higher yields or better yields in the corn and maybe more acres than you think there, you know, those could offset those other factors, and prices may not rally as much as one might hope.
Hey, Merrill, we appreciate you taking the time with us today. We'll talk with you again soon.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
All right. Bye-bye now. That, of course, Merrill Crowley. He's with Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, it appears the state directors of agriculture are not quite certain about NAFTA as President Trump prepares to renegotiate the deal. State ag directors are looking for fixes for what they say are unfair practices. The National Association of State Departments of Agriculture is an outspoken proponent of international trade and the Clinton-era deal with Canada and Mexico, but the group declared via a series of action items approved by members on Tuesday this week that the new administration should pursue increased harmonization, continued reductions in non-trade tariffs, barriers, and other opportunities to enhance U.S. agricultural producers' access to the North American market. In particular, the state ag chiefs say they have issues with the way Canada classifies all U.S. wheat as feed grade, the lowest grade possible, as well as moves by Ottawa to put in place new cheese standards that would limit imports of U.S. product. Certain provinces are also trying to subsidize local milk production to help their farmers. In addition, ag chiefs are concerned in the United States with an influx of Mexican fruits and vegetables that's causing U.S. producers and growers to see their prices plummet. Well, let's stay in Washington, D.C., where the nominee for Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue, is making the rounds on Capitol Hill this week, working to garner support for his nomination among key senators. He's had chance with Southern GOP Senators Thad Cochran and Tom Cotton, as well as Midwestern Republicans John Hoeven and Deb Fischer, though some from the Midwest have raised concerns about having a Southerner head USDA, something that hasn't happened since Mississippi's Mike Espy held the job at the beginning of President Clinton's first term. Purdue seems to believe the legislators are coming around. And finally today, we'll stay in D.C., where two of the House Foreign Affairs Committees are meeting and holding a joint hearing to begin examining the impact of a free trade agreement between the United States and Britain. While a bilateral deal is still a ways away, Britain cannot legally agree to a free trade deal with another country until it has left the European Union. The Terrorism, Nonproliferation, and Trade Subcommittee and the Europe, Eurasia, and Emerging Threats Subcommittees will explore at the hearing the next steps in what they labeled the special relationship. And that's a look at the day's Ag News. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Earlier today, I traveled to Springfield for the annual Pork Expo. Yesterday, the Illinois Pork Producers Association elected a brand new president. His name is Jason Probst. He's from Neoga, Illinois, in Cumberland County. I asked him to define the importance of the livestock sector, pork production, in the state as it relates to the economy.
It's very important. You look at the livestock industry in Illinois, and it's the number one consumer of corn and soybeans out there. So it helps drive the market. I know we hear a lot about the ethanol plants and exports. Those are all great things that help drive our pricing. But at the end of the day, when you look at total corn usage or total bean usage, it goes into the livestock sector. We look at the DDGs coming out of the ethanol plants. Well, you got to feed that. So ultimately, that goes back into the feed side. And so just all those different things that are out there, very important. It drives the economy. I look at, your rural counties, livestock is your little factories out there. It brings tax bases in when new hog barns or new cattle feedlots get in or new poultry operations come in. It adds the taxes. I look in Cumberland County, where I'm from, we don't have a lot of industry down there. So when any of our producers decide to build a new hog barn, it's around $8,000 to $10,000 in taxes per 2,400 head finishing barn that gets built. And so those are our little factories that help spur our economy down there. And the other thing I look at is from a standpoint, the producers that have the livestock, they've got a natural fertilizer source. And I've witnessed, when the land prices are going up, the livestock producers were the people that were buying a lot of ground because they were able to put the value of that manure that they would have to buy as fertilizer back towards the price of ground. So, they're looking to have their own little fertilizer plants essentially right there. One of the surprising things is livestock has the biggest impact on Cook County by far because of all the further processing of meat products and different things up there. So it brings a lot to light on what things mean to the state by what we do downstate and how it affects Chicago.
So oftentimes we think of the meatpacking plants in Beardstown and Rantoul, but really it's those processors in Cook County that are also in the midst of creating a higher value product.
That's correct. The plants you just mentioned, they do the initial work, and then the different meat products go to the different little small mom and pop shops, to different value-added chains, different things, but they add value to that product and be able to bring that through. And it's just a good way, to be able to continue to add value through the food chain.
On that note, the pork producers have a brand new program where they're looking to take young people to Fair Oaks to see pork production. In the way it's done, if you've been to Fair Oaks, which is in Indiana, mostly known for dairy, but now in pork production as well. How many students do you think you'll have? And of the ones you've sent so far, has it been successful?
It has. So we started in the fall of 2016 with our first classes of students, basically fourth graders from the Chicagoland area, going over the Fair Oaks adventure. And by the end of 2017, we'll have 3,000 students that went over there. And so far, we keep repeatedly hearing it's the best field trip they've ever been on, being able to experience, what actually goes on a farm, which, most people just don't have that connection anymore to see that. And so just understanding what goes on, seeing the baby pigs being born, see, the environment that they're in, and just feeling out what goes on and the different protocols that we go through. It's been very amazing. All the teachers have been very appreciative. The feedback from the kids, they enjoy it. You know, the questions their parents are asking later because they come home, they're talking about this trip they went on, and just it spurred a lot of conversation, which was the ultimate goal, that we want people to talk about stuff.
I have traveled to this particular venue with University of Illinois college students. I have seen the hog facilities, the dairy facilities as well. You see a lot more barns than I do. Are these typical of what you would see in your lifetime?
They are. Obviously, we put them on a little grander scale, and you put the viewing areas in there so you can see some things. But when you look down, you know, the farrowing rooms are what you're going to find out there. You look at the gestation area, you know, units that have pin gestation, that's very similar to how they set things up with the different systems they're using. You know, it's very, you know, they show, you know, everything that's going on. There's nothing there that's, you know, that's hid. So you see exactly how animal behavior is and what happens and the different things that happen through life.
Let's switch to some state legislative functions. The LMFA, the Livestock Facilities Management Act, is a couple of decades old. Does it still work the way it was designed, and should it be reconsidered?
It's been, like I said, 20 years old. It was put in place by livestock producers, environmentalists, and property owners. And, you know, it's worked very well, in my opinion. It's allowed a footprint for you know, livestock producers to be able to place units in place or expand their existing operations, at the same time protecting the environment and putting safeguards in place that work, you know, allow property owners to enjoy their property. When I look at it, I don't see a reason to change it. It's worked very well. I look at the aspect of, you know, it gives a blueprint to what people do if they want to build a unit, and if they can't fit the criteria, then those projects don't get brought to fruition. So it's done a very good job to not have bad projects come about and waste time and cause problems in the communities.
It would be a miss. One last thing from you. You are a University of Illinois grad, animal science. Has that served you well?
It has. It was a great decision. I owe it to my ag teacher, Doug Falk, there at Cuba High School. He was an ag ed graduate from the U of I, and so we were on campus a lot between FFA programs and just things down there, and I fell in love with the campus. It just felt like home, and it was a great move. I know the first day I went to class, Dean Campion was the dean at that time, and he came in to talk to us, and I had met him at the state fair right before that. Didn't think anything about it. He walked in and said, "Hi, Jason," and it just left an impression on me. You know, the faculty, your dean of your college, you know, they knew, you know, who you were as far as that, excuse me, I should say head of our department at that time, not dean of the college. That was Dean Gomez at that time. But it was one of those things that, you know, just the instructors, Dean Olson was there, Dr. Wessel, everybody, you know, they just had a great impression on us, and it's just been great. And the staff we have from the animal science, and just, you know, learned a lot and was able to take that animal science degree, go into the feed industry, and you know, which opened up a lot of doors and opportunities for me to be a contract producer and be a production manager, and just a lot of different things that I would never trade.
Well, congratulations on being elected the president of the Illinois Pork Producers Association.
Thank you, Todd. Appreciate everything you do for us.
Jason Probst is from the Illinois Pork Producers Association. He is the new president, hails from Neoga in Cumberland County. This is the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, now joined by Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to take a look at the forecast. Start with Brazil for me, please.
Well, it certainly looks as though the majority of Brazil is going to see ideal weather. There has been a little bit of delay here recently with the harvest in Mato Grosso. In fact, areas southward into Paraná and parts of São Paulo have also seen a fairly high frequency of precipitation here recently, and the end result of this is that field work has been slowed down. The pace originally was really quite aggressive. We will see conditions improve, though, as we move further out in time. Probably as we get out towards the middle and latter parts of next week, there'll be a lot less precipitation occurring, and these farmers will be back in the fields rather aggressively. Outside of that, we've got that drought that's still prevailing in northeastern portions of Brazil, and that is going to continue for just a few more days, and then there's going to be some scattered showers and thunderstorms that will help to ease some of that dryness. Now, that area only produces about 4% of the corn and 4% of the soybeans, and it certainly isn't going to be a total loss. But so whatever they lose up that way will be countered by the good conditions in the rest of the country. Argentina continues to have a generally improving outlook. You know, it was just a couple of weeks ago that a big part of the country was standing in water, and there was a lot of concern about lost production. And we've been now 2 full weeks without rain in some parts of that same region, and showers and thunderstorms are going to be returning as we go forward into the end of this week, probably Thursday into Saturday. We'll see showers and thunderstorms, and the ground will become moist again, and there should not be any further issues with production in the majority of Argentina. As we go through February, I think we'll see a good mix of rain and sunshine, and all of this extreme weather that we've had over the past few months should become history.
How about other places you've been watching?
Well, I'll tell you what. Actually, what we have right now developing is rather interesting. And that is that yesterday, NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's ENSO model, flashed a very significant El Nino forecast. In fact, the model has become very aggressive with trying to produce an El Nino event that would begin in March and April and be underway in a significant manner from April through the summer. Now, I have to be honest with you, I think this is a very aggressive forecast that I don't buy. I think that there might be some El Nino tendencies as we move through the spring and into early summer, but I think the model, I don't know what it's got a hold of, but I think it's way ahead of itself. So if you hear rumors out there about El Nino coming back, it might be true, but I think the model is just too aggressive right now. If that happens, of course, there might be a little bit more support in our marketplace, because India would have a rough summer, possibly, with more dryness. And the same could happen in palm oil production areas in Indonesia and Malaysia. The Philippines could run into some problems, as well as mainland areas of Southeast Asia. Here in the U.S., it might actually help us have another halfway decent summer with a good mix of shower and thunderstorm activity and temperatures that are not necessarily oppressively hot.
Thanks, Drew.
You bet. Have a great afternoon.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm Todd Gleason.